I'm Jim Capper, and I can clinch a playoff spot with a win this week and a loss by Adam by more than 8 points, plus one unique stat from Andy. And this is AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I almost forgot my intro. Welcome back, everybody. It is we're really now getting into the thick of things when it comes to the playoffs. No matter if it is 18 weeks coming up or whatever, we have bye weeks for teams on week 19. Anyways, want to bring in Adam. We have a lot to talk about. How you doing, Adam?
I'm going to try my best to cover that 8-point spread there. Depends on who you let me play. Let me have a quarterback.
Oh yeah, I know. Considering the numbers of quarterbacks this year, just quarterbacks like crazy. Tampa Bay. Before we go live today, Tampa Bay has signed another quarterback.
I think gives them about 72 for the year.
I know it's something that you were trying to look at, and I hope you do. If you do end up doing it, I'm curious to know the number, because I know you were looking back at 2010, and then you're looking back at the last AF2 season, right?
Yeah, in 09, just to see how many quarterbacks this league really went through, and if possible, because a lot of them this year are not. They're not injury related. Look, I know somebody made an argument on, I don't even remember where I was reading it, that, the NFL uses, 1.8 some odd quarterbacks per team, but how many of those are due to ineffectiveness versus injury? Whereas in this league, the only, really bad injury situations we have were in Cleveland, obviously, in Spokane over and over again. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh had the injury situation.
Yep.
Chicago now with Russ Mikna.
Yep.
But I that might not necessarily be all of them. But Tommy Grady now in Utah.
Yeah, man.
Aside from that, I mean, everything else really is a product of the first quarterback you brought in sucked. So you had to go with somebody else.
Well, it's funny. You look at who Utah signed. I mean, he comes back again like he did last year. Todd freaking Hamill.
Well,
you know what?
I mean, what are you going to do in a pinch? You got to bring in somebody who's got some sort of a clue. Where if you do make the playoffs, somebody who's at least been there.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think Grady would be back technically until Arena Bowl, right? Or is he done for the season?
Well, just based on his injury, I think he's done for the season. But yeah. I think he would technically be able to come back for a conference championship game,
right,
because he would have sat out three games at that point, four games, including the first round at that point. We know that Utah's probably not going to be in that spot anymore.
Yeah, I was about to say, considering that they can't seem to win on the road, they are not on the driver's seat now. It is Spokane, which. I will admit, Adam, as I said to you before we started, I never expected them to even be in the, with the way they were playing earlier in the year, I never expected Spokane to be on the verge of clinching another playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, we said 6, 7, 8 weeks ago that if they could just find a way to, stick around in this race and then get everybody healthy, if this would still be a team that's got, a pretty good shot. Look, it took a lot of help. Who would have really thought that 8-8 would put someone in the driver's seat, at this point to get into that last playoff spot? Credit to Coach Keefe and just cutting and pasting together wide receivers and quarterbacks and defensive players and you just, you look at the move that changed Spokane's season, and it was seemingly pretty subtle one with Utah. They flipped centers and traded Kareem Smith for Eric Meyer,
yeah,
who now is a starting quarterback, and Kareem Smith is now playing in the UFL. So Utah has nothing to show for that trade. Spokane has a starting quarterback, and now look, you can see what the result is.
And then you have a team like who looked to be totally in the dumps, San Jose. They are now on a two-game win streak, which was obviously started by them stopping that 13-game win streak by Jacksonville. And then Jacksonville has lost two in a row. So San Jose is now in the thick of things. I mean, they're right there on the bubble also when it comes to possibly making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, and it's with San Jose, it really does look like a case of the team started playing at home again. I mean, look, the game against Jacksonville was at home, and we said before, you know, before you went on vacation last couple weeks ago that this was a team that at the time was 4-3 at home, 1-6 on the road, with a couple home games still left to play. So, you know, again, the question is, are they going to be able to go on the road these last 2 weeks and win? And they have to do it. But not only are they going to have to win these two road games, they're going to have to win likely three road games to win the Arena Bowl as well. So this is a team that's really going to have to win five straight road games after winning one on the road all season long.
Yeah, and they had a tough game this week, especially versus Spokane, because Spokane also themselves are being a game up in the driver's seat in the National Conference playoffs race. So it's very interesting. I mean, I'm actually glad to see that this is occurring, but I think you and I are also dead on too, by the way. I don't think we're going to reach our three teams. We may very well make it, but no, actually we won't. We won't get our three teams coming out of the West like we thought. So it's, either way, I mean, it's, you're mentioning too, is that we may have only, what, one team coming out of the American being over 500, possibly?
No, it's probably not going to be the case.
Right now we have two. It's Jacksonville and Orlando, sorry.
Well, there's four teams right now in the American Conference that are over 500.
Okay. Oh, no, sorry, making the playoffs, you're right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's, I do find it very weird how off we were that conceivably the Western Division could have one playoff team this year, and it could be Arizona. But that being said, I still think it's pretty clear that, you know, the combination of Spokane, San Jose, Utah is a lot better than the combination of Tulsa, Kansas City, Iowa.
Yeah.
So a lot of the problem that these teams in the West have, they all got the crap beat out of them by Arizona. Arizona went 5-1 in division. That means there's only one win there for the rest of them. And that there you have season splits all over the place in the rest of the West. And it really, you know, it really killed them. It really is a case of good teams beat each other up. Now, are any of these teams better than Dallas? Probably not. And they're not better than Chicago either. So, you know, credit to those two teams for you know, putting together the seasons that they put together.
It's true. Dallas having a huge win last week over Jacksonville, you know, winning by five. Chicago.
Give Coach Dozell a lot of credit, too.
For sure. This
was a terrible, terrible Dallas team that he inherited from last year. I don't know if he's coach of the year, but he's definitely got to be in consideration for it.
And then, obviously, there is Chicago with the loss of Russ Mikhna. I actually thought that they were going to be pretty much done, but, I mean, you know, they were able to beat the interception-prone Jordan Force last week, you know, so under the, what can we say, the sellout disguise in Georgia, whatever they're looking to call it. So, a lot of interesting things. I mean, Pittsburgh, a huge game this week, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but Pittsburgh, Cleveland, great game to be on the NFL Network. But Pittsburgh, I don't know. You know, Pittsburgh has just happened to come up against a couple teams recently where they've either collapsed or they've just been totally outplayed. I mean, that's what it was last week. But the line,
I'm sorry, but it just seems like in the American Conference, there's just nobody wants to. Seven of the nine teams lost last week. You know, nobody seems to want to take those playoff spots in the American Conference, and whereas in the National Conference, you've got teams winning left and right who are, you know, just trying to, you know, to just find their way into that last playoff spot. Tulsa's playing well, Spokane's playing well, San Jose's playing well, Utah was playing well until Tommy Grady got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you look at the other conference, Cleveland's not playing well. I mean, Cleveland's only scored 768 points this year. Pittsburgh's been outscored by 100. Orlando has no quarterback right now, and Georgia's starting quarterback just threw five picks last week.
Exactly. A lot to talk about, and, you know, some of these teams would not be able to do what they've done even if we had only 16 weeks, you know, instead of the 18 games. So, I mean, as I said, a lot to talk about. Let's see. Let's go over quickly some of the more interesting stuff from last week's games. I think one of the most interesting and intriguing games was the first ever arena football game played outside in Spokane. I think the game would have been a little bit better. I think if Tommy Grady had been playing, but, you know, it seemed to be okay. They drew a record crowd of over, I think it was over 16,000.
Yes, the crowd did look very strong at Joe Alvey.
Yes, it did. Yeah. The setup, I will admit, was unique. You know, it's basically, people are saying, well, I saw a news article about it, the game, saying, you know, the boards are going to be the same, the playing surface is going to be put down, but, you know, how are we going to do the, there's an issue with how we're going to put up the nets. And I'm thinking, anybody who's been following arena football long enough knows that some of these teams that practice outside actually use cranes like they did to hold up the net system. So I don't know, I don't know what the big deal. I think Tampa Bay does it, or in Orlando, or I think one of those two teams at least did it once or twice.
Yeah, I know Orlando has. If they have done it, they haven't done it recently.
Yeah.
But I don't know about Tampa Bay or any of those other teams. Yeah, it's a very interesting setup. I think that. You know, when I was listening to the broadcast, they mentioned that they brought this field and these boards in from one of the, you know, alphabet leagues, and the boards in that particular league, I'm sorry, not that the boards don't go all the way around, but that they have curved end zones in this, you know, wherever they got this field from.
Yeah.
So there actually were not boards in the end zones like there normally are.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting little quirk. I don't know. There's something about the wind, you know, watching the first kickoff of that game just barely get to the end zone, because look, kickers are afraid to put it over because it's just the same thing as you may as well kick it out of bounds if you're gonna put it over the net.
Exactly.
Taylor Rowan did a great job dealing with the wind for Spokane, but Utah's kickers, just didn't seem to ever really totally get a grasp on it. I guess in fairness, he didn't have enough shots to practice it like Spokane's did. But yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting little quirk. If it's gonna put butts in seats, great. It's a great thing. But in terms of the game itself,
no.
It was really just a game. I mean, if I had to give it a grade, I'd give it a C. It was pretty average.
Oh, was it? Well, I mean, you look at the score itself.
Forget about the actual. Yeah, forget about the gameplay itself. I'm talking about, you know, just the idea of having it outdoors.
Yeah.
You know, players wearing visors, coaches wearing sunglasses, and things like that. I don't know. It didn't do it for me.
It would have been neat to see what I like under the lights, because the way that the set, you know, how north they are, and when it came to when the sun was setting, it by the time the game was over, the sun was still up, so it hadn't set yet. So I would have been curious to see it under the lights. I think a lot of people are talking about, you know, it would have been cool to actually see if it had rained, how it would have changed the game.
I think it would have been a disaster if that's what had happened.
So, I mean, but overall, I will admit, I think it's a pretty neat idea. Are they going to do it every year? I don't know. I mean, if they keep on drawing these crowds, maybe they will. But
well, they make it sound like it's going to be an annual thing in Spokane.
I guess it depends on, I guess, what their schedule is going to be like, and who it's going to be, and how much they can.
And what else is going to bump them out of their home arena?
Yeah, well,
that's a different story.
Yeah, was it anything that bumped them out of their home arena, or was this already scheduled?
No, this was something that was specifically designed for this event.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I just think it would have been a travesty if, you know, a playoff spot was legitimately determined based on the fact that it was raining outside, you know, raining in an AFL game.
Yeah. Yeah. So it would have been pretty neat to see. You know what I mean? It's a lot. You know, this reminds me along the lines right now of what currently is happening in the CFL with Touchdown Atlantic in Moncton, New Brunswick. You know, the one neutral site game, even though this was a home game for Spokane. You know, it's good only once a year, but you don't want to see it happening all the time.
Well, yeah, but you're also talking about nothing changes when you move the game to Moncton. In the CFL, absolutely nothing changes. It's still the same field. It's still an outdoor. You know, it's a different setting, but it's still the same outdoor venue.
True.
It would be as if they put a new team there. You know, you can't move a team onto an outdoor field in the AFL.
No, it's yeah. Yeah.
It's more like the one NFL game that they play in England, because the fields aren't treated the same way.
There you go. That's a good.
So the field is slightly different, but it's still not the magnitude of taking an indoor game and moving it outside.
No, that's true. I think the only difference is also, too, in Moncton, is that because the field is usually only used for track and field, they actually had to put down a turf for the end zones, or for the last 10 yards, and then I think for the end zones in each end, I think, if I remember correctly. But overall, I probably get the experience from what I saw. I mean, probably was a lot better on being in person, obviously. I'd probably give it a B from what I saw. Nothing negative against it at all. I think it's a great idea, and if they continue to do well, then by all means, continue to do it every year.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Exactly. Why not? Let's see. What else here?
A lot of ugly scores last week.
Oh, God.
A lot of them.
Yeah, I know.
And a lot of games that really had uglier scores than what they look like.
No, it's true. I mean, we mentioned it before, Chicago, Georgia. I mean, the 10-point score there, really wasn't. Tampa Bay, I think, scored 33 2 weeks in a row. Is it 33? Yep, scoring 33 2 weeks in a row.
Well, the Storm have had it. I mean, the Storm have absolutely packed it in.
San Jose, as that San Jose is getting hot, dropping the Orlando by 20.
Yeah, a close game there until pretty late on. Game was 40-40, and Orlando just forgot to score for the rest of the game.
Yeah, and then there's obviously poor Pittsburgh, wrong time in the thick of a playoff spot, and running into the Arizona Rattlers.
And more importantly, for Arizona, that's the game that wrapped up the number one seed for them throughout. I shouldn't say the number one seed. They had the number one seed in the National Conference already, but it's guaranteed that as long as they keep winning, they keep playing at home.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
I've got my got the tentative plans to be flying out to Arizona.
Now we're talking. There's some before we get into the interesting playoff scenarios and possible issues that are going to arise during the playoffs that you had brought up. Something that very surprised me, and I actually got caught off guard by, because I heard Donovan Morgan was going to be going to the UFL, and obviously I guessed the wrong week, and I got my fantasy team got messed up by it. But then this week, this big news that came out of Philadelphia, and a minor press release, stating that Donovan Morgan has, quote-unquote, chosen the AFL over the UFL. Those who may not be following the other leagues is that the UFL has been totally decimating a lot of the good players in the AFL because their season starts – training camps start, I think, next weekend, and their season starts in less than a month or just over a month. Very interesting. What do you think, Adam? I mean, I did not expect – I thought Morgan was done. I mean, you look at Morris Purify, one of the best players that the AFL has seen this year, probably will still be chosen as one of the top players of the year and with the extensive amount of awards that the league's giving out this year. This surely could prove that Morgan was a marketing player. No matter what, I think, I don't know if he knew for sure.
Well, even if he was a marketing player, there's no doubt he'd be making more per week in the UFL than he's making here.
Right.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, even at the, some of them, the top players are making $50,000, and that's over just 8 weeks, I think.
I think minimum wage was, maybe it was maximum wage was 60. I don't remember the minimum wage or maximum wage was $6,200 per week.
Okay.
I don't remember. I'd have to look that up. But I know the possibility is there to make $6,200 a week, which is basically $50,000 a year.
Yeah. I was just getting very surprised. I thought Morgan was done. I actually think that there's more to him coming back to the AFL than meets the eye.
It seems really odd that you get – I don't want to say Donovan Morgan's the best player that the UFL snatched up, but that – he's obviously one of the best players in this league, and he's obviously, would be, one of the best AFL, if you want to use the term, graduates into that league. I find it funny that he comes back, but in the same breath you have, I don't even know how many, I'd be interested to see how many players were actually put on other league exempt this year because of the UFL.
Yeah.
The CFL is nothing that's new to the AFL. For years, the CFL has been taking players out of, the creme de la creme, pretty much, of the AFL.
Or been able to find those diamonds in the rough. It's true. It's
right.
True.
So I think it's very clear there isn't an AFL fan out there that would say that would argue the fact that, save for maybe in the NBC days, that the CFL was not a cut above the AFL.
No.
It just always has been. The pay scale is better. The game is more, probably a little bit more like the NFL game, you know, the ultimate goal for these players in terms of their, you know, the height of their careers. But the fact that this, you know, UFL comes in and plays, you know, basically just football, pretty much. But you know, and just a league that just has all sorts of financial problems, but yeah, is still pressing forward, yeah, with everything for some unknown reason. To be able to take all these players, and these guys aren't guaranteed spots on rosters.
No, they're not.
These are just basically, you know, roster invites to try to make a team. Last year we saw this with Chicago with, I think it was Mikna, mm-hmm, and,
oh, I'm trying to remember who it was.
It was somebody else who just left for 1 week to go get a UFL look from the team in Las Vegas. And, you know, fortunately they came back after 1 week, but unfortunately it was only a game against Milwaukee, which, you know, happened to be, you know, the team that they were fighting for a playoff spot. It happened to be they won that game somehow. Still not totally sure how they did that. I think it was they won that game.
Wasn't it Sammy Parker last year?
Yes, that sounds right.
I think it was Sammy Parker because he led the team in receptions, yards, and touch. Almost.
Yeah, but those guys didn't make the team, so they came back. These guys don't sound like they're coming back, and a lot of them, why would they? You know, they leave now, and, you know, if you're on Tampa Bay or Philadelphia or Milwaukee or, you know, one of these other teams that's clearly not getting in the playoffs, why would you come back?
Yeah.
You collect your last $400 paycheck and then go home? I mean, this doesn't seem to make a whole hell of a lot of sense. But for these guys to basically give up on their jobs, because it's going to be hard for them to get back in the AFL now if they want to do that. Just basically for a shot at making a roster where they can make, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a week for 8 weeks, and then maybe will never be heard from again because they probably are just going to be scrubs on the team anyway. It definitely does not speak highly of the AFL, to say the least. And it's becoming more and more evident as players are just being plucked regardless of what team they're on, regardless of what situation they're in. You know, who knows? This could happen in the playoffs. Who knows? And it would be the league's worst nightmare to see, you know, Arizona going into the, you know, conference championship game and on, you know, whatever night they put, you know, Friday night they play a game and beat, you know, whomever they beat to get to the Arena Bowl. And on Monday morning, up comes the UFL to sign Nick, you know, to sign Davia.
Well, it's also with the same thing too, is that these NFL players, if the NFL player strike is resolved, Arizona could be losing Rod Windsor.
Yeah, and Cleveland could be
Bergeron.
Could be losing Troy Bergeron, and you really don't know who else could get a look. And now I understand more when you talk about
Arizona would lose their kicker too.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you talk about the NFL camps, that's always been a problem, but there was always a wink-wink agreement in place, I think, that as long as you were still in it in the AFL, you didn't leave.
Exactly.
Until the season was over with. You know, we saw Tamon Marshall do that in 05, maybe, mm-hmm, where he got a look from an NFL team, and Grand Rapids was still in it somehow, you know, until there were a couple of weeks of play, and as soon as they were eliminated, he left the team.
Right.
For those couple weeks. But for the most part, those guys didn't leave until their team seasons were over. Did it give them less of a chance of making an NFL roster? Absolutely. But it didn't deter the AFL season. The UFL, on the other hand, has no care whatsoever about that. And the players have less care because, simply put, they're not making the money.
No, exactly. And unlike the CFL training camps start in June. Usually these guys have already been signed. Well, we've seen a few, you know, a few AFLers were signed by the CFL before training camp. Some were returned because they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, and same thing too. Minimum salary in the CFL, according to their CBA for this year, is $43,000.
Yeah.
So
now, granted, $43,000 in Canada may not necessarily go as far as $43,000 does in the United States, but still, it goes a lot further than $400 a week for 18 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's becoming more and more apparent as really as the days go on, not even as the weeks go on, and we see, you know, let's see, who was it on Tampa Bay that was Dukes and
Whitaker.
Whitaker or Edwards?
Whitaker.
Yeah, it was Whitaker. You know, that these guys just up and go with every passing day to the UFL, and we look back and say, geez, where do we really sit? And I guess we also don't look at it in another direction. We see all these guys that are getting signed as well. You know, because look, somebody's got to fill these roster spots.
Yeah.
What I don't know, where have these guys been playing? Are we doing the same thing to an SIFL or an AIFA or something like that, where they're in their playoffs or nearing their playoffs?
No. Actually, a lot of the guys who have been signed recently, and then I've seen because it's coming over the news wire and stuff, their season is done. The SIFL championship has been completed. So two of the more named players, and I don't remember that off the top of my head, their season was done. And they were signed and brought in, and I know a couple of the other SIFL players are being looked at.
So their
creme de la creme are being brought in, but not during their season. And that's the issue. And I know we can talk about another person coming in. We're talking about Arizona possibly losing
Rod
Windsor, and they sign another huge AFL name and AFL alum, Chris Jackson, but we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. Supposedly the league is going to be looking at this. Is there anything beyond raising salaries that the AFL, that Commissioner Kurz could do to stop this occurring? Now,
absolutely. Absolutely, okay. One thing there's absolutely one thing that can help, and that's letting the players certify as a union again and giving them some sort of union benefits. Won't necessarily require raising salaries, but it may require guaranteed contracts. It may require, you know, more marketing players or more guarantees to marketing players. Whatever it is, but as long as these guys aren't playing under a union, because they're not playing under a union
right now, so
there's no pressure from the union to stay. There's no reason to stay. So what if you've got a contract? Who cares? What are they going to do? They're all 1-year contracts. There's nobody that's under contract for next season.
You are right.
So they're all going to be free agents again. So I guess we shouldn't definitely say that. We should say allegedly everyone's under a 1-year contract.
Well, that's my understanding too, that everybody is under a 1-year contract too. But,
if the league is showing no loyalty to these players with their contracts, why should the players show loyalty to the league? Mm-hmm. So it might not even necessarily be more money, but more guarantees for things, and not saying, okay, look, just the 25 guys on your roster or whatever it is, are going to get paid every single week, and if you're injured, you're going to get half your pay, or if you're not playing for whatever reason, you're only going to get half your pay, or if you just get cut, you get no compensation whatsoever. You know, when you think about it, if you start off a year with a team, and you get put up, and you're not from this city, you're just coming here to play football, and you get put up in the team housing, and all of a sudden, 8 weeks into the season, you know, you get cut. Where are you going?
And if you don't have a job lined up for you in that city.
Yeah, you don't have a job, you don't have a home, because you're going to get kicked out of there. Mm-hmm. You have nothing. And that's the sad reality of a lot of these other little leagues, and why a lot of these little leagues, you know, the AIFAs and the SIFLs and all that, why they just don't make it, and why they just don't attract any players of any note whatsoever.
Well, I think another difference there is also the difference in ownership too. You don't have as many shyster owners, but anyway, that's another topic for another day. But
I don't want to say that because I don't know. I don't know what the owners are in the other leagues.
Right.
Yes, we have a ton of shyster owners in this league. That's pretty clear. But if the league does not figure out how to give some sort of a loyalty to their players, whether it's in the form of guarantees or money or whatever it is, there's nothing that is going to stop these players from up and leaving whenever. And yeah, and what might be the best thing that happens for the league is that one of these guys on one of these playoff teams, not even for the NFL, for the UFL, for the CFL, for whatever other reason, decides, whatever, I don't care that my team's in a playoff push, I'm leaving. That might be the best thing that happens to the league, even though it would be a travesty this season, because it might force someone's hand for the future.
In order for even at $30,000, Adam, for this year's 18-week schedule, you would have to pay a player, if we were to go to a minimum salary, you'd be paying a player approximately
$1,700 a week.
$1,700 a week.
Yeah, which obviously is dramatically increasing the pay scale of the league. Mm-hmm. But again, we also don't know what these players get for health benefits and training and, you know, pensions and anything like that. But I'm assuming it's virtually nothing. I would go under the assumption that these players get housing, some meals, their athletic training facilities, and game checks. And that's it.
Would you be opposed to, adding, now I know Commissioner Kerr is saying he wants to continue slow, which I can understand. We are basically starting, the league is basically starting anew again, as we know. Would you be opposed to putting another salary cap? Because as an example right now, if we were to go at a minimum, set a maximum, let's say even as a maximum salary, okay, of $30,000 a year, let's put in the cap at $750,000 per team.
But that's tripling salary still.
I know it is. I know. But is that what is necessary? Do you need, as I said, maybe increase the game amounts to 1,000 a week or 750 a week, and then you have your marketing player at, say, 2,500. I mean, would you get, even at 2,500 a game?
No, I mean, if there's no guarantee in there, I doubt it. Because it's still not the money they're going to make for playing in the UFL. That's our biggest competitor right now, clearly, is the UFL.
Yep.
You know, and if the UFL is going to come in and advertise you can make 50 grand for playing 8 weeks, I don't want to say the AFL's got to match that, but the AFL's at least got to hold a candle to it. There's at least got to be some sort of allure,
right,
to stay where you're at.
And I said, I don't think you can throw the CFL into this mixture. I don't think so.
No, I don't think you throw the CFL in this mixture, because I think in the grand football hierarchy, it is very clear that the CFL would be a graduation to the next level. Okay. I don't think the UFL, personally, is that much of a graduation in terms of enhancing the abilities of your career to get to the NFL.
Right. I mean,
and besides, how old is Huey Whittaker? I mean, isn't he like 30? At 30, you're not getting a call from the NFL. If you haven't gotten a call yet, you're not getting a call. So these guys are clearly only going for money. It's clear. They're going for money. And that it's a sad state because it never used to be like that. But in fairness, when it was like that, where money was being thrown around left and right, that's what got the league in trouble in the first place.
Well, it's like Chris Greisen. I mean, it was enough to draw him and keep him there, which he's staying. So it was almost.
Yeah, and he stayed through a move. You know, you're talking about a team that, you know, he was happy here in Orlando. He loved it here.
Yeah.
And then they moved the team to Richmond.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell there is to do in Richmond, Virginia, but he's finding it out.
Go to Virginia Beach and sit on the beach. I don't know. Oh, but you know what? It's going to be interesting to see what Commissioner Kurz does over the off season, get together with their competition committee and decide how are they going to stop this. I've seen a contract. I've seen the old contract and the way that it was written. It does not include, obviously, the UFL in any way, shape, or form. You know, the old clause said that if you were, you could go freely to the NFL or to the CFL. But it's totally different now.
But that's also that's also something that probably went through negotiations with the union.
Right.
The union doesn't exist, so the players have to play by the owner's rules, so the only leverage that the players have is saying we're not playing.
Unless they're using the old AF2 contract, which is the only thing I can guess, but maybe it's just a modification of the contract also. But I'm all for positives. I hate seeing these teams be decimated. I wanted to see a player like Maurice Purifoy, see how much farther he could do. You know, if it wasn't, you know, you had Rod Windsor stay his entire year last year, shatter records, and yet he did not go to the UFL. So I don't know.
Well, the longer the UFL sticks around, the more players are going to want to do it.
Yeah, true.
Because, I mean, I can understand the skepticism the first year of the UFL, you know, especially knowing that right off the bat, before this league ever played a game, there were a ton of financial issues.
Yeah.
So I can understand that skepticism, but the longer this league sticks around, either what's going to happen is these players are just going to start to roam freely, or the AFL is going to have to concede the fact that there's another, there's a new third tier of football in North America.
That's right. I'm all for positives, Adam. Obviously, I hope that they can do something to rectify this. And as you said, I think it, to me it is. I'm happy for the players that are getting plucked by the other leagues, but also it's embarrassing. And you have teams that could easily be a shell of their former selves by the time playoffs. If some of these teams do make the playoffs. It's frustrating. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it definitely is.
So, on a positive note, you know, getting away from this, Chris Jackson. Where did that come from? You know, Chris Jackson, a long-time, very well-known player. If anybody remembers the old NBC days, this was the Chris Jackson that was featured in the full-page ad for the new Spalding AFL footballs in Sports Illustrated. That Chris Jackson. This is the Chris Jackson who's been a part of many, many three-headed monsters when it came to wide receiving cores. You know, one of his most well-known, obviously, was with Troy Bergeron, if I'm not mistaken, in Georgia.
Yes, it was. Yep.
He was
Lee Bergeron and Jackson.
Yeah. And I think he was also part of a very known, wide receiver core in L.A.
Yep. Lee Hopkins and Antoine Marshall.
So, where did this come from? I saw this and I'm like, what? Now, and you brought up a very good point. And the point was that you think the reason why he came back to a perfect team to come to. It's not like he went to Milwaukee. It's not like he went to Philadelphia, even though I'm sure he could have. But he came back because, in your opinion?
Wanted to win a championship.
Wanted to win a championship.
You know what? He won a championship in 08.
Did he?
Yeah, he was a Philly.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, because it just came to me, and the only reason it just came to me is I remember interviewing him after the game.
Signing of Chris Jackson, like we're going back to what we were saying before, is this a possible stopgap if they lose Rod Windsor?
It could be. Somebody could be doing a lot of good thinking in Arizona. If it is, more power to him. Look, you found a guy who's 36 years old, but you know, the AFL isn't necessarily about speed, especially at the wide receiver position. It's not necessarily about, you know, your physical abilities as much as it is knowing the game. And you've got a guy now who's run pogos 8 billion freaking times in his career. look, he may not get there as quickly as he did, but he's still getting there and still knows where he needs to be.
And you look at last week's stats alone, Adam, for Arizona, having Chris Jackson on the roster. They threw to 5 different receivers. None of the receivers got more than 8 receptions. Rod Windsor, you know, basically their go-to guy, 5 receptions for 30 yards.
Yeah, and that's the thing is no one has to be the man in Arizona. You have so many other options. You know, it's a lot like the situation you've got in Orlando right now, where you've got Robert Quaroga, you've got T.T. Tolliver, you've got Bobby Scipio, and you've got Josh Bush. Josh Bush would be a starting wide receiver on most of the rest of the teams in this league.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you've got a ton of options, and if someone's not having a good day, you've always got someone else. This isn't like Georgia's situation with Maurice Purify, where the offense was just crippled when he was put out of the lineup.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm only talking about when a wide receiver were to come out of the lineup. Obviously, quarterback's a different situation. But there are just there are. It would be like if we took Donovan Morgan off Philadelphia. You know, the offense just has no go-to guy to be able to, you know, you say, okay, it's, you know, 4th and 6, and I need these yards, and this is my man, and I'm throwing the ball.
Right, and they tried that when Donovan was, I think, out for a couple of games, they tried that with Keith Stokes. Great returner. He was a great go-to guy. I mean, I think he had a fantastic opening game for the Soul. But it's true. After Morgan came back, Keith has sort of taken a back seat to everything else. He's now more or less on returns. So, yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, you look at this alone. I mean, you know, it's not – we all know that – you know, anybody doesn't know about Chris Jackson, you've got to check out his stats. I mean, he is within three receptions of 1,000, by the way, Adam.
Okay.
He has 320 career touchdowns and just over 13,000 yards receiving.
And virtually every team he's ever played on has been really good. Those LA teams were all really good. The only team that sucked was that 05 Grand Rapids team, and he got traded halfway through the year.
Exactly.
Great Georgia team.
I remember that. I remember that. It's funny, the amount what he did for Grand Rapids, for Georgia and Grand Rapids were almost identical, which is even scarier. So it is a huge name for them to pick up. Huge. You know, I mean, obviously him living in his hometown in Santa Ana, California, I'm sure made a heck of a difference, you know, depending on – remember, the AFL now is really, really, really a regional league now. It's totally gone back to the old days where you'd have regional players sign. And it helps the team. So, I mean, he's going to make an impact. A huge impact, and it really gives them a leg up.
It will only be magnified if Rob Windsor does happen to actually leave.
Yep. Exactly. So, I mean, I know. As you said, whoever was the mastermind behind this to pull this off, props to you. I mean, who would have thought, eh?
Absolutely.
Two quick things before we get into some a very, very large scope of playoff talk. You and the things you brought up, and it has to do with, and it's not really that Jacksonville's lost two in a row. Tampa Bay is going through an overhaul, and Orlando's falling apart. You know,
the whole state of Florida is falling apart right
true.
Now from
I mean,
the looks of it.
The total surprise 2 weeks ago when I was away in Prince Edward Island was seeing the stats that, wait a minute, Nick Hill did not start for Orlando versus Pittsburgh. It was Colin Drass. I'm thinking, that came out of the blue.
It's not like we didn't know Colin Drass can't win the AFL.
Right.
We found that out last year.
Right. I mean, Tampa Bay, and then Tampa Bay that same week getting shellacked by New Orleans.
At home with the season on the line,
I just don't know what to say. I mean, you're looking a little bit more at these two teams themselves since you are basically there in the South. But, I mean, Tampa Bay, I think we can all say they're trying to – play for 2012. I mean, it's a given. Would you be surprised if there was a coaching change?
No, not really. There's a lot of coaching changes that probably need to be made. But look, it's clear Dave Ewer was not anybody's pick to be the head coach of the Storm at the outset of the season. We got to remember with Tampa Bay this year. It almost seems like it was remarkable that this team was even able to compete for as long as it did, knowing that a week before the season, Tim Markham, I'm just going to say, was called what it is, got fired. Mm-hmm. You know, you could use the fancy he resigned term all you want. He got fired. You know, we didn't know until about 3 weeks before the season that Brett Dietz wasn't coming back to Tampa Bay.
Right.
You took the whole defense and shredded it from last year and basically and cut and pasted it back together with Tim McGill and Jermaine Smith and these guys who came in, you know, 5 weeks into the season, 8 weeks into the season when these guys finally came back, you know, obviously weren't the same players that they were a year ago. The revolving door at quarterback from Jevin Snead and B.J. Hall in the preseason to what was his name? Mike Potts
and
Ryan Zabniewski and Danny Southwick and who's gone now and now Matt Grothy and it's really just amazing that Tampa Bay is even able to field the team and that it isn't the worst in the league. So I, you know, from that standpoint, I give credit to Coach Ewert and his staff, but yeah, the whole thing really needs to be blown up and started over again with some sort of centerpiece to build the team around. Because now, you know, two of the best players on the team, you know, Dukes and Whitaker, are now gone, and it's like they signed six guys today or five guys today or whatever it was, and there could be as many as 11 new faces on the roster this week, from what I'm hearing. Just to try to throw something off the fence, see what sticks. Matt Groth, he's a local guy, went to USF. They looked at him once before, didn't like what they saw, but they're going to give him, you know, they might give him some game opportunity now to see, you know. And against, look, two good teams. A good Georgia team coming into Tampa this week, a red-hot San Jose team coming in the next week. So it'll be an interesting test. This is not New Orleans coming to town anymore. So Tampa Bay is a wreck, and Orlando, anybody's guess what really happened with that, with Nick Hill. One of the most efficient quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
Arguably the most talented quarterback the team has had this side of Jay Gruden in its history. You know, with an offense that, by Orlando standards, was putting up a ton of points, then all of a sudden you pull the plug. Sure, you look at what Colin Drafts did in that first game against Pittsburgh, and you say, oh, look at all the points, and then you remember, oh, wait a minute, you know, the defense created some of that, some late BS created some of that, and oh yeah, those two net recoveries.
Net recoveries, yeah.
That and, you know, on back-to-back plays that broke Pittsburgh's back. Excuse me.
Oh boy, you're getting yourself riled up there.
I'm getting all riled up over the
Predators. By the way, just a quick note, and we're talking about total changes in the league and stuff like that. Here's big news. Off the transaction wire, the second leading wide receiver for the Iowa Barnstormers, Todd Blythe, has been placed on the injured reserve list.
Well, not that it really matters to Iowa at this point.
And
okay,
they've been assigned Brian Villanueva.
Really?
Seriously?
I think that's bad news for Brad Banks.
Villanueva.
Yeah, Villanueva, who was awful last year. I mean, they were smart enough to get rid of him after one half of football. Thank goodness.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, the opening game of the year.
Yep, against Chicago.
Yeah, opening game of the year.
I remember he turned the ball over on like three of his first four drives and was never heard from him again. Thank goodness.
I mean, going back to Orlando's obviously in the driver's seat when it comes to the playoffs, at least at the moment. Tampa Bay, one of their worst records since. I'm trying to think of what.
No, it's going to be the worst record in team history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not. It's been a very epically bad season for the Storm, but it's hard to say we didn't see this coming. It really is. You look up and down their roster, and you just see, you know, you look at the years of experience, and you just see R next to, like, almost all the freaking names, signifying that everybody's a rookie on that team. You get what you get. You bring in a bunch of local guys, you see if they can play. Most of them can't. And that's a sad reality.
If they can get, you know, right now they are tied for their least amount of wins ever. I think going back to even Pittsburgh, I can't really count Pittsburgh because only four games or whatever. If they can win one more game, it'll be the, you know, they'll at least have seven wins and it will tie the 2006 team.
Yeah, it's just an epic fail, basically, from a team that was in the Arena Bowl last year. But it's, you know, it's like when the Florida Marlins, I know I'm switching sports here, when they won the championship in 2003, I think. And the next offseason just sold off every piece to that team. And yes, they still introduced them as the world champion Florida Marlins, but not a single player on that team had a damn thing to do with it, it felt like.
I was about to say, sounds like a lot like that, well, total different situation, but it's like the 94 Expos.
Well, yeah. Well, that was just the Expos every year. But, you know, it's...
Well, no, that was the strike. That was the strike.
Right.
So.
Yeah. But yeah, it's sad that you see this franchise going into this spot. But again, we saw this one coming. I think it's good for the league. You know, I'll try to take off my black and red glasses at this point, but I think it's good for the league to see Orlando in the playoffs again like it was last year.
Yeah.
You want to see that streak keep going of their, you know, all these years in the playoffs. you know, just for the sake of saying that you've got the best streak in North America at this point.
Yeah. Well, I hope, you know, obviously I hope Tampa Bay turns around. They've been a flagship. So Orlando's been, you know, for at least not to have one team, one of these two teams in the playoffs, it seems a little, you know, not to have any of them in the playoffs is a little weird, but at least to have one of the two in the playoffs is a positive.
Yeah, and it could still happen. You know, if Orlando gets beat this week by Tulsa and it seems, you know, who knows? You know, yes, these, you know, we'll talk about this in a little bit, but, you know, if Orlando loses this game, all of a sudden they can come down to that game against New Orleans to determine whether the Predators are actually going to get in the playoffs or not.
Ouch.
And you'd like to think you could beat New Orleans to end the season at home, but, you know, the way this team's played the last, really, month and a half or so, just has not been good.
Well, I don't know, what should we go on to? I know you wanted to talk, but we can touch on it slightly. I know you wanted to talk about a lot of the 16-game records that were going to be broken, but after doing all the math, it ended up being that many that were actually being broken, right?
Yeah, I thought the show was going to be a lot longer from that standpoint. But, yeah, I mean, obviously when we look back at totals, we're going to see some just – I mean, every record in the book is going to fall pretty much, you know, individual-wise and team-wise. But I think we determined that the probably most notable record that was broken was actually broken a couple weeks ago by Derek Ross,
right,
who broke the record for most rushing yards in a season. He's got, what did we say, 556 or something like that?
Write
it down.
Yeah, I know. Didn't, of course.
Oh, okay, well, 550 some odd yards, I think. But he smashed the record by Michael Bishop, who had, was 400. Did you write that down?
Nope, going to do it now.
No, of course you did. 421 yards, I think, is the number that's coming in my head, and he did that in 05 with Grand Rapids.
Here it is.
So you know, Derek Ross, you know, great for him breaking the record. I was wondering whether Tiger Jones and his 1,900 yards plus receiving was a record, and whether the 180 some odd receptions that Rob Windsor has is a record, and then we look back at last season's stats.
Exactly.
That Windsor put up and went, oh, okay, yeah, that's not even close.
Derek Ross, 566, Michael Bishop, 459. And that record, by the way, by Michael Bishop, has been standing since 2005, the same year that Michael Bishop became the first ever Arena Football quarterback to run for 100 yards in one game.
Yeah, and I think the record for maybe 421 was the record for a fullback for rushing was Dan Alexander last year.
Yards, Dan Alexander, 429, actually was tied with Major Harris back in 91, and that was 2007. I know that Alexander set a ton of records last year for touchdowns.
Right.
So.
And we also know that Tulsa has rushed for 700 and...
Oh, it was around 720, I think, something like that. I think you even said that you're going to call that right now the official record.
Yeah, 779 yards.
779, yeah.
I'm deeming it a record. I have not gone through every single team in every single season to go check that back out. But I there are a couple teams that made it into the low 700s, but nobody had made it this high. So good for Tulsa when you have nothing but running quarterbacks and you know, a whole bunch of different fullbacks and wide receivers you hand the ball to, I guess.
Well, you got to admit the team is the team has gone through a little bit of a shift since they got Justin Allgood back.
Yeah, and it also seems to be a year. And again, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Speaking of Tulsa, Matt Bowsner?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was gonna mention this to you before.
He right now, as we all know, he left the team and is playing with Team USA in the Senior Football Championship in Austria. I think it is. He's not playing.
He's the third string quarterback.
That's the thing. He's a third string quarterback. So.
He's no Cody Hawkins.
No, I'm saying props for Tulsa for getting Morgan, for getting Allgood back.
Philly? Yeah.
Yeah.
You said Tulsa, but yeah, I got you.
Well, no, Tulsa did get Allgood back.
Oh, okay. You said Morgan.
No,
so.
I know. I got you. Yeah. But yeah, gotcha.
But what I was saying before is I'm interested to see how many rushing yards we've really had this year in relation to the rest of the rest of the years in the NFL. You got a lot of good rushing teams. Dallas is a great rushing team. Pittsburgh's a great rushing team. Orlando's got quarterbacks running with like chickens with their heads cut off. So you know, it's you've got a lot of running the football this year, which is something that is a seismic shift from what we saw in like 2008.
No, I know. Rushing, you don't think of the Arena Football League as a rushing league in any way, shape, or form, but all of a sudden, bam! You know, it started last year with Dan Alexander and his assault on the touch on the rushing touchdown record. I guess we could say for sure this is the most rushing yards that the league has ever had in a single season. I don't have their actual records in front of me, but could we go out on a limb and say that?
Nah, I wouldn't say necessarily, but maybe.
Yeah. Where was I going? Oh, yeah. Playoffs. There's so much crap. So much stuff going on. First, let's go quickly go over the playoff scenarios as they currently are. We will get to we're going to give out next week's games. We'll get to that in a moment. But currently, as of right now, as the league has put it, these are the current playoff standings. National Conference right now, Arizona has clinched the overall. Everything through the National Conference goes through Arizona as long as they continue to play.
Everything through the whole league goes through Arizona.
Yeah, exactly. They currently are playing at the moment. It would be Spokane. Spokane, if the playoffs were to start today. Chicago, Dallas has clinched playoff spots, and the league has already said, these two teams will be playing each other in the playoffs.
Yep, it's very clear that they're basically playing this week for home field advantage, but we'll talk about that in just a moment.
Yeah, and on the verge, as we were talking about before, but we're going to get to a little bit later too, San Jose, Tulsa, and Utah are still on the bubble, but very possibly could be over this weekend based on the current playoff scenarios. Heading over to the American Conference, where it seems like nobody wants to win clinch a playoff spot besides Jacksonville. Jacksonville does hold the everything through the American Conference goes through Jacksonville, because Jacksonville has clinched the home field advantage for the conference. As of right now, Orlando would be playing at Jacksonville. Cleveland would hold the two spot. They would be hosting the Georgia Force. And basically it comes down to the Pittsburgh Power. It's the only team right now, and it's a huge game this week, as we mentioned at the onset of the show. Anything can happen with this one game if Pittsburgh just happened to beat Cleveland. So it's huge, huge implications that are coming up. Now, what is interesting that you brought up, Adam, and you did a lot of great legwork on, is noticing that what could happen beyond week one of the playoffs.
Yeah, it seems like, at first, I guess we should start with the problems in week one.
No, first Jacksonville, as we mentioned 2 weeks ago, Jacksonville, they did finally announce their playoff dates. As we stated, they would be playing, if they went to the American Conference Championship, they would be playing the Conference Championship on a Monday night because they're being booted by those damn baton twirlers.
So, and just to screw over anyone who wanted to, you know, make reservations to go to the game.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm convinced it's an evil plot against Arena Fan.
Yeah, well, you know what? The way that it turned out right now with Arizona holding the, you know what I mean? Arizona holding the, we now know where most likely we're going to go.
Yeah, except for the fact that if Arizona gets beaten by whoever it is on whatever day that they play that game,
that's true.
We're going to be sitting there and, you know, there could still be three cities, you know, well, it couldn't be three cities, it'd be two cities, you know, and for Joe and I in Orlando, it's the difference between driving to Jacksonville and flying to, I don't know, Chicago or Dallas or
Pittsburgh,
you know, Pittsburgh or parts unknown.
Yeah, no, true. And from there, it actually gets even more interesting.
Yeah, so the first week of the playoffs, this game is very interesting this week between Chicago and Dallas, because the winner of this game will Chicago will certainly win the Central Division. If it's Dallas, will most likely win the Central Division. So we already know those two teams are playing each other. So basically, this game that they're playing, I don't remember whether the game's on Friday or Saturday and don't have a schedule up, but this week, okay, on Saturday night, is going to be for home field advantage in that game between these two teams. Well, interestingly enough, the circus is in town in Dallas at the American Airlines Center.
Oh, we're not talking about the Arena Football League, an actual circus.
So, yeah, good one. That's actually very good. But yeah, so the circus is in town. And for those of you who don't know, when the circus comes to town, it doesn't just stay for one night, it stays for 2 weeks. So for 2 weeks straight, not just 1 week, but 2 weeks, Dallas actually has no, well, at least Dallas's regular venue, has no spot to play. Dallas would either have to play this game in some other arena, or, I mean, you can't even play the game on a weird day of the week because the circus is there every.
And you can't play that reunion because reunion doesn't exist.
So it's a very interesting situation, and the talk is that it may not matter who wins this game, that the game may ultimately be in Chicago anyway.
Ouch.
It wouldn't be unprecedented. We almost saw it last year with Milwaukee.
That's true.
Now it gets even more interesting.
Does it ever?
In the second week of the playoffs, we already know Jacksonville's going to have to play on a Monday.
Yep.
We already know Dallas is still going to have the, you know, have the circus in town. But the Chicago Rush aren't going to be able to host a conference title game at Allstate Arena. There is, American Idol Live is going to be there. There's no way that American Idol is going to get bumped for the Arena Football League.
No.
Excuse me, I'm having all sorts of problems talking tonight. And before that, there are conventions on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and Sunday, already locked up for Allstate Arena. So there are, you know, unless one of those happens to give up its spot, or unless they're going to play the game at like noon on Saturday, because American Idol Live happens at 7 o'clock local there.
Won't happen.
If you're going to play the game,
won't
what was that?
Won't
yeah, I
happen.
Know it won't happen because it's American Idol.
No, it's also it won't happen because of the stage. Won't happen.
Yeah, so Chicago might be now. Unlike in Dallas, Chicago does have a few other options. They could play the game
at the United Center.
Well, maybe United Center. They also have the Sears Center there, I think it's the University of Chicago, Illinois, plays its basketball games there, and that's about a 5,000 seat arena that won't happen there.
And I won't think it will happen there because I think NCAA arenas are not allowed to have beer. Am I right in saying that?
If they're on campus, correct.
Yeah.
So. Hey, you know, if you've got nowhere else to play the game, you got to play the game.
I know, but 5,000.
Well, but don't worry because this gets even more interesting because that got me to thinking. Well, what happens on the Arena Bowl? Because unlike, you know, the other rounds of the playoffs have relatively open dates, as we have seen by they're going to cram this damn game in Jacksonville on a Monday. But for the Arena Bowl, the NFL Network has already told us the game is going to be at, is it 7 or 7:30? I think it's 7 o'clock, right?
It's 8, it's gonna, either way, it's gonna be 8, 8 Eastern. Either way.
Eight Eastern?
8 Eastern.
Okay, so it's gonna be 8 o'clock Eastern time on Friday, August 12th. Set in stone, that's what it's gonna be, cause that's when the NFL Network wants it.
Right.
Well, in Chicago, there's a WNBA game scheduled that night. Now, I'm not, you know, a soothsayer or anything like that, but my guess says that the WNBA is going to rule the day over the Arena Bowl, that the Chicago Sky are not going to want to change the date or time of their game. The WNBA came up with the schedule not caring about anything else, and with the backing of the NBA behind it, I don't see us winning this battle. So then I went and looked at other possibilities. In Pittsburgh, they have a concert scheduled the night of the Arena Bowl, and in San Jose, which is a lot less likely of a possibility, but in the event that they had the Arena Bowl, which would be against Orlando or Pittsburgh, they have a Katy Perry concert going on there.
Oh, Lord.
Now, Katy Perry's got a little bit better draw than Lil Wayne did, and if Lil Wayne bumped the Vigilantes in the regular season, mm-hmm. I'm very sure Katy Perry is going to be bumping the Sabercats in the postseason.
Now, knowing
so it begs the question, if Chicago plays Pittsburgh in the Arena Bowl, where are you playing the game? You have no other indoor arenas short of college venues in Pittsburgh.
Well, you're the United Center.
if can you afford the United Center?
Depending on if there's anything scheduled also to the United Center.
And is the AFL going to pony, or the Rush going to pony up the bucks to play in a big boy arena? Because
no.
Remember something, it's not just getting the venue. It's getting the venue, it's picking up the field, it's bringing it there, it's setting up the nets for one night.
Yeah.
It's going to be very, very interesting to see. I mean, look, hopefully for the AFL, hopefully Arizona keeps winning. They could play the, there's no scheduling conflicts whatsoever. They're going to have to play the National Conference title game on Saturday, which is a perfectly fine and normal date to have it, because on Friday and Sunday the arena is booked, but the whole next week is wide open from what at least
by the way, they will not, if Chicago hosts the Arena Bowl, they're screwed because Cirque du Soleil holds
has
the United Center for like a month.
So there you go.
Wow. Now, you're talking about all these issues. Could the possible rumor of New Orleans hosting the Arena Bowl next year been a stopgap for the possible scenarios this year?
you never know. For all we know, it won't be in New Orleans next year. But from everything we've seen, it is going to be in New Orleans.
But this way they have a date for sure. And they can.
And again, this goes back to the difference of the AFL 4 years ago and the AFL right now. 4 years ago, the WNBA would have been told, you're moving your game. You're not selling out. We are selling out.
Right.
You know, 4 years ago, this convention that they're having in Chicago, which is called, and I mean, don't judge it. I'm just going to tell you what it is. The Jesus Culture Awakening would be told, you're moving.
Yeah.
We're selling out. You're not. You're moving your venue. We're going to do whatever TV wants us to do with that game. So it's a lot different scenario now. We are really, for lack of a better term, a bush league that's picking up whatever scraps we can get together. It'd be interesting if the league would almost have no choice but to either play the game in a neutral venue anyway, or to tell the NFL Network, thanks but no thanks, and just go without TV. Just put the game on Nifty.
Oh, even worse.
It'd be a nightmare, but, I mean, what would be better? That or playing the game in front of 500 fans in San Juan, Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
I mean, because you got to find some place to play the game.
You do.
I mean, obviously I'm making light from the AF2, you know, making
right, one of the days
in the Arena Bowls in San Juan. But, I mean, what are you going to do, put the game in Tulsa? You going to put the game in Cleveland halfway between its two teams?
Might be the only viable option. But then a question is anything at Quicken Loans Arena?
No, Quicken Loans Arena is good. I looked that one up.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Cleveland's got as good a chance of hosting the Arena Bowl as Pittsburgh does.
It's true, yeah.
So, you know, take all that into consideration for what it is. If you're a skeptic and you're a fan of the league's demise or a fan of something changing, maybe you want to see Chicago playing Pittsburgh in the Arena Bowl.
I know. And, you know, I think it's probably the past couple weeks, this is the most negative that we've been harping on the league. But this is something we really can't ignore. You know?
No, there's a very, very realistic possibility that all of this could happen. You know, look, had Milwaukee beat Spokane, the Arena Bowl was going to be somewhere, but not at the Bradley Center.
That's right. Probably would have been over at U.S. Cellular.
So, maybe. If it was available, who knows? You know, and there would have been 4,000 fans there. Mm. They probably would have made Milwaukee travel to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad enough. We already know that had Orlando won that game against Tampa Bay, that they were flying out of Tampa to go to Spokane because the league had already booked the tickets.
Hilarious.
I mean, that's bad enough, but I mean, to really think, and I wonder whether anybody's really thought this far. I wonder if anybody's even thought about the possibility of a Chicago-Pittsburgh Arena Bowl. Or are we going to be looking up on Tuesday morning, 3 days before the Arena Bowl, and saying, where the hell are we playing in this game?
I am hoping, and I actually am, I have faith that the league actually has looked at all possible scenarios. You know,
hope so.
Unfortunately, you know, they have a date set. And the league should be able to have been able to check what is booked when, because we know some of the stuff is usually booked months in advance. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happens, you know, that the, you know, maybe if there is no, you know, I wish the league would be able to change the date, you know, being there may not be football, and they would be able to play it on a Saturday or whatever. But this one, I think, is unfortunately for the 2011 Arena Bowl, this one is set in stone.
This one could be a dark, dark moment, for lack of a better term, for the AFL. You know, if you play this game in front of, you know, 2,000 fans in a 5,000-seat venue somewhere nowhere near where either team plays, or, you know, maybe even worse, if you've got, you know, you make a big deal out of home field advantage and getting home field advantage and then having to play the game on the road anyway.
Yeah.
You know,
my fingers are crossed that's not going to happen.
I would hope that's not going to happen as well.
Yeah, you know, more likely than not, right now I'd put the game at 75% right now, because you really can't say anything higher than that. 75%, it will be in Arizona.
I don't know if it's 75% that it's going to be in Arizona.
Compared to most of the other options that we have at the moment, Adam.
Well,
that's the most.
If you're going to give me 4-1 of the Arena Bowl is not going to be in Arizona, I'll take the field.
Okay.
you still got to win two games.
I know.
And two games against teams that are hot too. Yeah, it's not like they're playing these American Conference BS teams that don't deserve to be there.
No, it's true. Yeah, I went with the National Conference is probably one right now, even with all the weird stuff that's gone on. National Conference is the stronger conference this year.
Absolutely.
So, interesting to say the least. Now, what do you guys think? I mean, do you think that it's going to be arena football apocalypse, the arena apocalypse this year when it comes to where the Arena Bowl is going to be hosting, going to be played? What do you guys think? I mean, let us know what your feedback is. You know, there are multiple ways you can let us know about it. You can let us know, obviously, on the message boards, but there is also our Twitter account, and there is Facebook, so it's Facebook, you know, /ArenaFan on both of them. And you can contact me directly, tim.capper@arenafan.com or adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. Now, we can't get up to the point of Arena Bowl without playing the next 2 weeks of the games, and that's where we're going to start. So the week 18 preview is brought to you by thefindout.com. For tricks, tips, and hidden treasures the internet has to offer, go to thefindout.com. It's something worth sharing.
Great PSA there, Tim.
No, I know. Hey, I'm getting verklempt like you were earlier, so. huge game, as we mentioned before, Friday, July 15th. NFL Network, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, not the NFL. No, this is Pittsburgh and Cleveland power. Gladiators possibly playing for all the marbles for the Eastern Conference, Eastern Division Championship. But so with a week to go, so. Pittsburgh wins this game, Adam. They hold the tiebreaker at 2-love because of the head-to-head. Cleveland wins this game. Most likely Cleveland has a total heads up when it comes to the...
Well, Cleveland will be up two games. I mean, Cleveland wins the division with a win.
Exactly. So, you know, of all the games, this is probably one of the most important games of the week.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh, I think, is mathematically out with a loss. I'm not 100% sure that they might be able to win a three-way tiebreaker between Georgia and Orlando, because I know they lost to both of them straight up. Mm-hmm. If Pittsburgh loses this game, Pittsburgh has to be out. So this is a playoff game for Pittsburgh. It is.
Yeah.
You have to win this game to get in. Now, you need to do more than that to get in. You're going to need a win, and you're either going to need to take care of business in week 20 or get some help. But this is rough, because this is a Cleveland team that's a lot different playing at the Q than it is on the road.
Yes.
It's a 3-6 team on the road, and it's played some bad, bad road games. But it's a 6-1 team at home, and it really hasn't had, you know, yeah, it's had that let's see, the one loss that Cleveland had at home this year was against, let me see, was it Philly? Oh, crap, it was New Orleans they lost to at home.
Yeah. Yeah, the debacle game that they played.
So, but aside from that, this team, you know, really has played a lot better ball at home. Now, granted, you look at the crowds here in Cleveland of late. You see 5,600 against San Jose, 5,000 against, you know, against Georgia. You hope you're going to get better than that with everything on the line. But Cleveland's in some tiebreaker hell as well if they lose this game. It's not quite a playoff game for Cleveland, especially unless Georgia and Orlando both happen to win. But this is going to be a big, big time fight. I've watched this Pittsburgh team play twice now. I watched it create a way to lose at Orlando. I watched it get really shellacked by Tampa Bay in the second half.
Yep.
I don't see it. I don't see Pittsburgh surviving this one. It's been a good first season for Chris Siegfried and company up there. Great crowds, great, you know, good atmosphere, solid play, some bad luck with quarterbacking play. I just don't think they've got this.
And what I don't understand either, and because I don't know the full story behind it, this is also a Pittsburgh team that I think a couple weeks ago, put their leading, rusher besides their quarterbacks and leading rushing touchdown getter Josh Rue on assignment. They reassigned him. They dropped him. I don't understand that. I mean, last week most of the rushing I think was done by Bernard Morris. So let me double check.
Your guess is as good as any of our guesses.
I do not understand that. Well, okay. Mind you, I'll give it. It looks like they're going with Michael Washington, which I think they nicknamed the joystick. So maybe it had something to do with that. But Josh Ruitt scored 12 touchdowns rushing. So I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. But you know what? I hate to tell you, as much as I like how this Pittsburgh team looked this year. I think Cleveland's going to win this one and take the Eastern Division and secure that. They're going to take that last one of those playoff spots. Number two seed, if I'm not mistaken?
That'll be what it is.
Jacksonville, Kansas City. Now, you and I were talking about this before the show. We know everything is about, you know, usually it's the hottest team at the beginning of the year. We saw exactly what happened to San Jose during the year. We saw what happened, you know, Arizona, how hot they've gotten, how hot Jacksonville was. Jacksonville basically has put on two stinkers over the past 2 weeks. I would hope that they would be able to get over the snide by playing the command, but you actually have a different opinion on this one.
Nah, I don't know. I look at Kansas City again. I see a team that's 3-4 at home, but that's a hell of a lot better than 2-7 on the road.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I just don't know if Jacksonville is going to care to show up in Kansas City at a place with, what are they going to have, 4,000 fans there?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. It's hard to get up for games like that. It really means nothing to anybody. You know, do you see Aaron Garcia for a full game? I would think not. I'm not even so sure I would let Aaron Garcia get on the airplane. He might hurt himself walking up the stairs. So I just think I might leave Aaron Garcia behind for this one. Look, it's a road trip nobody wants to take.
Yeah.
Jacksonville already knows what's going to go on. It wouldn't shock me if Kansas City ultimately wins this game.
Wow.
I don't think it should be classified as a huge upset.
Oh, no. But you know what? As I said, I don't think that you want, because with Jacksonville playing Spokane next week at home, I really don't think that you want a Jacksonville team possibly stumbling, and that's what it's going to be, stumbling into the playoffs with four straight losses.
Yeah, but again, it's going to be a Jacksonville team stumbling into the playoffs playing against somebody else who's stumbling into the playoffs in all likelihood. Mm-hmm. You know, unless all of a sudden Orlando and Georgia wake up and play two great games down the stretch, or unless, you know, Pittsburgh or Cleveland backs into the playoffs with a great game in week 20, it's a whole new season, and everybody knows that.
Oh,
look,
yeah.
We saw Jacksonville go into the postseason on a high last year and get beat by Orlando anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. The curse of Aaron Garcia is not going to be determined by a four-game losing streak at the end of the season.
Saturday we have it would normally be a great Southern Division matchup, but it's where Tampa Bay could actually play a little of a spoiler role. This is the Georgia Force team who came up, think. God, I don't understand what happened last week. It came off, I think it was had seven turnovers in their loss to Chicago. five by their starting quarterback alone before he was yanked. But, you know, Tampa Bay doesn't have much to play for, except I guess they can get a little up when it comes to possibly knocking off a team and knocking them out of the playoffs. But I actually think Georgia, the way that Georgia played last week, and they know exactly what type of position that they're in, I would not be surprised if Brett Elliott rebounds and that they're able to beat Tampa Bay.
No, I think, for lack of a better term, this game is going to be a good old-fashioned ass-beating. You know, you just don't know what these guys are going to do for Tampa Bay out there.
Yeah.
This feels a lot like the situation last year when Tampa Bay was hosting Bossier Shreveport, and this was the first game. I don't even remember the kid's name. Jimmy... damned if I know. You know, it's some quarterback who's never done anything before in his career at any professional level comes in and plays this game with a whole bunch of guys. You know, it was the game that Randy Hines just didn't show up for.
Didn't show up playing.
So, you know, it's just kind of what it feels like. It feels like I'm going to look at this roster for Tampa Bay when I go down there on Saturday and go, who? And just... you know, I don't know. I just don't see Tampa Bay being able to put up a fight in this case. This was a game that with a, you know, relatively healthy Tampa Bay team with Brian Zabnewski and Huey Whitaker and Hank Edwards and all those guys went into Georgia and got ass beat. Yeah, final score was only 60-49. It was a lot worse than that. You know, the offense for Tampa Bay scores 6 touchdowns on the day. The offense for Georgia scores 8 touchdowns. And the defense gets a safety. I don't know. I just don't see how this game is even staying remotely close.
Iowa, Milwaukee, but obviously we're just playing.
Yawn.
We're just playing it out here. Who knows who's going to start? You know, for Iowa. Do we?
Or Milwaukee?
Yeah. Do we?
And I guess we know Gino Gadulli starting.
Yeah. Or hey, it's not going well. I'm very surprised. Could we have another future star?
No.
No.
No. No, sorry, don't buy it.
Okay,
just don't buy it.
Wow, I'm looking at this, and you know what? Even that right now, even the Magic 8 Ball is shaking his head, saying, "I don't want to pick this one either." So you know what? We'll move on. Orlando, Tulsa. This game does have some ramifications in the playoff race.
Well, this game's got a ton of ramifications.
Yeah.
Tulsa needs this game to stay alive. Yep. Orlando needs this game to wake up from the dead. Possibly the last home game in Tulsa Talons history?
Yeah, we've heard this. Anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, again, it seems like the second or third year in a row, the owner of the Tulsa Talons has come out and says, it really is 50-50 if this team is going to be back for the 2000 and X season. So, you know, I really would hate to live under that. I can understand in Tulsa it is a money thing, and truly it looks like it is a money thing in Tulsa. I don't see how the fans can live under this every single year.
You know, well, they don't. I mean, look, you had 5,000 fans last week at the biggest game of the year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't. It's pretty clear. But in terms of this game itself, you know, Tulsa is, again, this is a case of a national conference team playing well right now versus an American conference team. It's playing like dog crap. You know, what quarterback is showing up for Orlando? Who knows? And when you get Colin Drafts, you get in the Colin Drafts that stuck around with San Jose, that played a dynamo second half against Pittsburgh, or you get in the guy that looked totally lost in his first start against Pittsburgh and went 4 straight possessions down the stretch against San Jose without getting a single point. Too many inconsistencies in Orlando. A team that feels flat, another team that's gotten crippled by the UFL, Thomas Coleman. Left Kenny McIntyre has been playing and not playing, you know, due to injuries and age and just the whole thing. I don't know. I've got a hard time believing Orlando is going to be able to go on the road at a place like this. Again, tough game to really get up for on a road trip like this. Another 4 a.m. wake up call on Friday morning to go to this game.
Yeah.
For the Predators, they're taking a 6:20 flight out to Tulsa. I mean, the good thing is they're going to have a day to prepare at least for it. But Orlando, not a great road team. you know, this year 4-4. You know, look, one of those wins was New Orleans. You know, one of those wins was Milwaukee. One of those wins was Iowa. This is a lot better team than that.
No,
it's the Tulsa team.
Good point.
I just don't see Orlando being able to pull this one off.
But it's funny, I'm actually going to go the opposite direction, and I'm going to say with how poorly that they've played, Coach O'Hara is going to be able to, I think, be able to get them up to this one. And Orlando knows what's on the line. I think Orlando will be able to, I think they're going to eke out this one.
And Orlando gets in with a win. Tulsa needs a win and some help to stay alive. I think, even though the league thinks that a win is good enough to keep Tulsa alive, right. I disagree. We'll talk about that when we talk about Spokane in a little bit. Yeah. But Orlando knows the win, you know, the win either in this game or at home against New Orleans in week 20, which should be a gimme, but you never know, would put them in the playoffs once and for all. You know, the other thing with Orlando in this game that we don't know, if Pittsburgh loses on Friday night, Saturday's game don't mean a damn thing.
Yep.
So it's very possible that this could be a throwaway game for Orlando as well. And a lot of heat possibly on Coach O'Hara. A lot of people thought this Orlando team would be, you know, a 15-16 win team this year. Not maybe 10-8, maybe 9-9, maybe 11-7 team kind of limping into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So a lot of heat on PO right now. And a lot of it revolves around that quarterback situation and what's going to go on with Nick Hill and Colin Drafts going forward for the rest of the year. I just don't know whether Orlando is going to be able to get up for this one or not.
Another huge game this week. This one will determine which team hopefully will not be playing in the parking lot during the playoffs. Chicago-Dallas. Dallas has been dynamite at home. I mean, very, very good at home. I think right there that would give them a little, and their crowds have gotten bigger. I mean, this is a totally, as you said before, totally different team than it was last year. Chicago coming in to this game with a somewhat subpar win over the Georgia Force. You know, they were up by a lot more, and then you know, they give up it's a 20-7 run by Georgia to make it as close as it was last week. But Dallas coming off of a huge upset, I call it an upset over Jacksonville. I really think, you know, even though these teams are going to be playing in the next couple of weeks, I'm sure one team wants to have all the momentum. One wants to be able to win the division and hopefully decide who's going to play where during the playoffs. Because it's just a home record also, I'm going to go ahead and give Dallas a little bit of an advantage in this one.
Yeah, I'm still just not overly impressed with the Chicago offense, really at all. I'd like J.J. Raderink, I think. You know, I mean, he's not – I really forgot about Russ Mikna, but I mean, who wouldn't? But you look at what he's done, you know, since coming to Chicago, went 19 of 33 against Utah, went 20 of 30 against Georgia, threw four touchdowns in both games. Neither of these teams have defenses that are that great, right?
No.
I mean, Dallas's defense isn't exactly, you know, stellar either. But again, like we said, team that plays a lot better football at home. And the other thing with Dallas, 6-1 in division, only loss against Chicago. This is, I think, a lot more important game for Dallas than it is for Chicago. We know the Rush can play on the road. We've seen it. We saw it last week against Georgia. I don't think Coach McMillan is in any way, shape, or form afraid of going on the road.
Right.
Especially since based on arena availability, he might not have a choice. I think this is a very good spot for Dallas to win what I think is going to be a just damn good arena football game. And
yeah,
we haven't seen a lot of those this year.
No, we got some great games, and having to flip through Nifty, you know, it might not be that much of a hard choice to decide which games you're going to be watching this weekend. So, New Orleans, Utah, this is the Utah. Okay. Todd Hamill did great for a very short week. I will admit, they're back indoors. They don't got to worry about the elements. This is a game that Utah has to win point blank. And I think, you know, with the way the New Orleans – this is New Orleans. You know, sure, they knocked off Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago. They lost by 21 to Milwaukee last week. But, you know what? I think this literally is Utah's game to lose.
Well, these are the – world-beating New Orleans voodoo on the road. It's strange to think that New Orleans is going to finish probably with a better road record than Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Tulsa, Spokane, San Jose, Utah. But still, you know, this team's not very good. You know, good for Coach Norris to get that one win against a Tampa Bay team that, you know, is equally a train wreck at this point. I don't have a lot of confidence in Todd Hamill, but he did, until really the, you know, he looked like a different quarterback in the second half. First half did a great job.
Yeah.
Didn't make really a single mistake in the first half against Spokane. Couple really not great passes with some rust, but, you know, look, I don't know when the last time was this guy picked up a football.
Besides last year.
Yeah, besides last year. You know, look, I guess I got to go with Utah, right? I mean, Utah loses this game. It's mathematically out, I think.
I think so, too.
So it needs, you know, Utah needs a win to have any hope. Not that I think this team has any serious chance of winning the Arena Bowl one way or the other. But, you know, look, and again, in fairness to Utah, just, you know, speak about this for a second. Ron James takes over a team that's a complete freaking train wreck and turns it into a contender.
Agreed.
You know, 18 weeks into the season. He's done. You know, there aren't a lot of coaches that are going to miss the playoffs that I think deserve to keep their job next year, but Ron James, I think, has done a better job than some of the teams that are going to get in the playoffs.
You know, my thought, too, and I just thought about this now, and you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, look at the wide receivers that they've had since Aaron Boone went down.
And they are in the UFL now.
Lesway's in the UFL?
No, he's still around, but from the... what was it? They've had three wide receivers go to either the UFL or lose via injury. They lost Kareem Smith to the UFL. They just lost their center last week to injury. They've obviously lost Tommy Grady. This is just a complete cut and paste team.
Now, my question was, is Aaron Boone eligible to come off the IR? I can't remember.
No idea.
I can't remember what year. I can't remember
what it feels like.
I can't remember what week he went on the IR.
Let's see. Let's look that up real quick. Aaron Boone. Game logs. Aaron Boone last played in week 10, so he's clearly been able to come off of the IR.
He was placed at...
pretty impressive. 8 games and 90 catches.
Actually, the funny thing is, you're right, because Boone and Lesway actually were placed on the IR the same week back on May 19th. So I'm wondering, remember they were talking about all the stuff with Boone and his knee, saying how he was not going to probably never play again. I have a sneaking suspicion that Boone may have gone and done the surgery. I'm guessing. I'm guessing here. So, but he's been there at the games though. He's been there to support his team and to support his brother.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's not. Maybe I don't know. I don't know. Maybe with the wide receivers that they have, I don't know. And finally, you're able to flip games. If there's ever been a game between two basically 500 teams. With such big implications as any, this is the game that this would be the last game that you would want to watch this week. So you have your Pittsburgh-Cleveland game that you want to watch. You have your Chicago-Dallas game, and then after that, switch over to San Jose-Spokane. Spokane is going to be playing back indoors also. This right now, Spokane wins. They are completely in the driver's seat for that last playoff spot. San Jose also needs this game very badly just to get on even keel with Spokane. When was the last time that we saw a game between two teams like this that meant something? And remember, this is also a Spokane team that got shellacked in week one. I think it was week one by San Jose.
76-48. Yeah.
So, huge game. Very, very huge game.
And two very different looking teams.
Agreed.
I mean, you look at that game. I'm just going to read off the names that were on offense for Spokane that day. Kyle Rowley.
Who's now the backup.
Raul Vigil.
Who's on the IR, who
is eligible to come off the IR this week, but we don't know whether he's going to play or not. Marquis White in the UFL. Greg Orton in the UFL. Emory Sammons, I think, is still on the team, but he had one catch for 8 yards on the day. You know, Kareem Smith on defense, no longer on the team. You know, and then on the other side, Rodney Wright had 12 catches for 123 yards, and nobody's heard of him since then. Nichiren Flowers, I don't even know if he's still on the team anymore. Let's see here. He's on the IR. Hasn't played a game since week 7. So we haven't heard from him in a couple months. So, you know, these are two very different looking teams. But the bottom line here is that Spokane is a 6-2 home team. And, you know, granted, okay, fine. 5-2 inside of their arena. You know, 6-2 home team against San Jose, who, like we said, has to win 5 straight road games. Next week's road game in Tampa Bay, probably going to be a gimme one way or the other. Mm-hmm. But this is very different. This is very, very different. And again, it's not just that Spokane was beaten by San Jose. It's how badly Spokane was beaten by San Jose in week 1.
Whip, you know, like a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah, I mean, this was the champ coming to town and getting whooped. It's not the end-all be-all for Spokane. Look, there's a chance. I don't know how three-way tiebreakers play out with you know, Utah or Tulsa getting thrown into the mix with San Jose. But I know, you know, I think if Spokane wins this game, they're in regardless. The league is fighting with me and saying that Tulsa still got a shot. Based on the way I'm calculating it, based off of the way that they're presenting it as the playoff tiebreakers, I think Spokane's in with a win.
Mm-hmm. So well, well, they have said Spokane, if they win their next two games, they are in. Either way.
I think Spokane is in, period, after this week, if it wins against San Jose. And we know San Jose is out with a loss.
Yeah,
this is a playoff game.
That would put them two games back. And I think the only other option, as you mentioned before, I think would have been Tulsa. They would have to win this week. They would be at they would be a game under 500. You know what? I don't see how that's possible. You're right. I actually agree with you because Tulsa right now is 7-9. That win would put.
It would require a straight up tie. It would require either Tulsa winning a straight up tiebreaker with Spokane, or a three way tiebreaker with Spokane and Utah at 9-9.
Yeah.
At that point, I don't see how it's possible because Tulsa got whipped on common opponents with Spokane. Because ironically, the two teams didn't play each other this year.
It's yeah.
Don't get that. Tulsa played Milwaukee twice, but didn't play Spokane once. So whatever. But yeah, this is tough. But ultimately, I think that winning tradition of Spokane, you know, this is a team that gritted through 4 quarterbacks in 2 games. And, you know, I like the way this team looks, and it's still, for as much as San Jose looks improved from these last 2 weeks, those were home games, this is a road game. And it's a road game at, and we've said it time and time again, one of the hardest venues, if not the hardest venue, yes, to go play arena football.
Agreed.
Right now.
Agreed.
It could be a close one, it could be one of these, you know, I'm hoping for the Wild West shootout, you know, the 83-77.
Oh, that would be nice. That would
be phenomenal. Look, neither of these teams have a defense. It's very possible.
Yeah,
but I think somehow, some way, Spokane finds some way to win this game, put San Jose out of its misery. Much to my chagrin, you know, it's a San Jose team you don't think of as a team that's going to play and not be in the playoffs. You know, you look at San Jose, Tampa Bay, and potentially Orlando could all be sitting home.
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's weird. It's weird. It's going to take a lot of getting used to.
Yeah. And by the way, there are two teams on bye weeks this week, league-leading Arizona and
giver-uppers in Philadelphia.
And Philadelphia. So, but Donovan Morgan will be playing with it, you know, that's something to see, I guess. their final game of the year. But you have three powerful games, I think. Three games you have to watch this weekend, starting on Friday. Should be very. I mean, I don't think you can ask for anything more. I mean, three meaningful games.
Oh yeah, no. There's more we could ask for. Three good, meaningful games would be what we would ask for.
It would really, you know, obviously it may make week 20 all of a moot point. Good.
Yeah, I mean, the way the league is telling it to us, if let me look at the standings here one more time. If Cleveland wins Georgia wins, Orlando loses, Spokane wins, Tulsa loses, and Chicago wins, the entire postseason is set. Of course, the teams will be set, the locations might not be set, but the teams will be set.
Exactly, exactly.
And the home and road teams will be set.
Yes, yes. So, either way, it looked like a great weekend. And you know what? 2 weeks, you know, basically we're gone for almost 2 weeks. We wanted to make sure we had so much to talk about. As you see, we hope you stuck with us for the entire hour and a half plus that Adam and I have been talking. Obviously, it is for you, the fans. If there's any feedback, let us know about it. Before we go, Adam, any last words?
You know, normally I have something witty to say here, and I don't think I have much witty to say today, so I guess not.
No wit?
No, I'm too tired to have wit. Okay. I'm planning a wedding. I'm too tired.
All right. Well, again, anything that you guys want to let us know about, email us. Tell us on the message boards. We'd be more than happy to try to get it on the show for you. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight family, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.